Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Yevamos Daf Zayin. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf Gemara before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur begins in the middle, practically in the middle, of Daf Zayin. If you like, you can count 22 lines from the top. You'll notice in the middle of the line a house marking that appears after a bracketed section. The markings indicate that we're in the middle of a sugya, and we've pointed out over the last several shiurim that we're in the midst of a very long sugya. We're trying to establish why the Torah had to write a special word, Aleha, in the context of the erva of Achos Isha, in order to tell me that when it comes to mitzvahs yibum, even though in general we have a principle of aseh doiche loisaseh, in this case, in the case of yibum, we won't allow you to violate the aseh, or violate the loisaseh of marrying an erva in order to mekayim, in order to fulfill the positive mitzvah of yibum. The fact that the Torah goes out of its way to write Aleha indicates to us that without that, I would have said, Aseh Doche Loisaseh, that the positive command of Yibum would overrule a negative command, even though the negative command of forbidden women involves a Kores penalty, which indicates a very severe type offense. Where do we get that idea from, that a positive command could overrule a conflicting negative command that carries with it an isur kores, or a penalty of kores? So the Gemara continues, and we continue in our search, the search that we've been involved with for the last several pages of Gemara. Elo itzrich. Note that we have a long point, and the long point will be followed by a longer rejection, a dechia. And that will cover us for the balance of this page and the first quarter or third of Amud Beis. So the Gemara says, Itzrich, I need Aleha, the special word. Salka daita chamina, I would have thought otherwise. Teve hai eshes ach, dovor shehoye bechlau. That the example of Eshesach, the wife of one's brother, which for our purposes is a reference to the mitzvah of Yibum, where a person's brother died, leaving a widow and no children, she is Eshesach, is an example of one of the principles by which we expound upon the verses. And that principle is right here, Dovor Shehoye Bechlal, something that was part of a general rule, the Yotza min haklal lilamed, and it was isolated by the Torah, taught separately in order to teach us something. Lo lilamed al atzmo yotza, elo lilamed al haklal kulo yotza. Now, Eishes Ach, a woman married to one's brother, is strictly forbidden to any of his other brothers. However, in the event that she doesn't brother left no children, so she is then mutter, she's allowed, she's muteris to the other brothers, to the surviving brothers. So that even though Eishes Ach in principle is an erva, it's a forbidden relationship, a woman forbidden to marry for one of the other brothers, she's an erva. But we see that in the absence of children, this erva is allowed. So according to the principle of Dover Shahoy Bechlav Yotzim and Aklav Lelame, Lo Lelamed Al Atzmi Yotza, Lo Lelamed Al Kol Kulo Yotza, that rule tells us that it then serves as an example for everything else contained within the rule being Erva is prohibited. However, if there are no children, so the erva should be allowed. The Gemara continues in a bracketed section illustrating this idea of Dover Shehoya Bechlau, V'yotzem and Aklau, etc. But the main point has just been stated. Once again, why do I need Oleho? Because without Oleho, I would have relied upon the rule of exegesis that we just demonstrated. If you skip to the section of Gemara after the brackets, you see the squiggle underline indicator in this sugya. We've been using this squiggle underline as a deflection or a refutation. The Gemara says, "Mi dummy." I'm skipping the bracketed section momentarily. "Mi dummy." How can you compare the basis of the rule that we just articulated, which is found, the basis or the background is found in the bracketed section? How can you compare? And the Gemara will go on to show how you cannot compare the general rule of exegesis that we just articulated with the case of Yevomis, the case of Yibum, which is our topic. So that will be the nature of the rejection of the Gemara. If that be the case, the question will remain then, why do I need the Oleho word? To suggest, like we just did, that I need it because otherwise I would have relied on this rule of exegesis saying that and then allowing the marriage with the erva, not so. So on Amud Beis, Elo, you can see after the second bracketed section, you can see where the next house appears on Amud Beis, Elo, Salka Deita Chamino, Teisei Achois Isha Bema Motsinu, and the Gemara will go on with a new suggestion. Following that, a rejection, again a new suggestion, and we continue therefrom. In the meantime, we go back to the Gemara, where we encountered our first bracketed section. As we noted, that the suggestion for the need for Alel comes from what otherwise would have been a rule of exegesis that would have allowed the surviving brother to marry the widow who is an erva, a forbidden woman to him. You'll notice we have a starred note where we explain why we have these brackets, even though we said it already. Let's read the note together. Ad kan ikur hadvorim lo matzrichim oleha. Up till this point, we've explained why I need oleha, why I need that special word. B'socha sagrayim, within the brackets, muvo divrei reka, a background information is brought. Le'inyan dovor shohoya b'chlal v'yotza v'chulei. The background to that rule of exegesis, that's something that was part of a general principle, and then isolated. It was isolated to teach me about the rest of the principle. V'achakach muvo hadugmo shel'esh esach. And after the Gemara brings the background, the Gemara then will apply the rule to our case of Eshes Ach, wife of brother. Achrei ha-sugrayim, ha-Gemara tidche ha-shvo'o. After the brackets, the Gemara will then, where we have the Dalet that's encircled to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara will reject the comparison, the Korban comparison to Eshes Ach. The Achsar Sheila Lomo Tzrichim Aleo, and the question will then return, why do I need the Oleho word? If you happen to be a first-time listener to today's shiur, my supposition is that you will find this very difficult. So, needless to say, it is very important to have heard the series of shiurim that led up to this sugya. As we said, we're in the middle of a long discussion. So now, let's that having been said, we have a tat nose mivne heading on the other side of the one, the other margin. The tat nose means of a subtopic, and the trapezoid or volcano shape appears, ketzad. The word ketzad is highlighted in using this marking. Hesber l'shnei klolei limud. We're going to be giving illustrations of rules of exegesis that we'll be exposed to as we go along. The first rule is Dover Shoy Bechlau, an item, a point of law, that was part of a general principle, the Yotza min haklal, l'lameh. It was then isolated by the Torah, focused upon, a detail was focused upon to teach. Lo l'lameh al atzma Yotza, the focusing of the Torah wasn't to teach about the specific example itself, l'lameh al haklal kulo Yotza, but rather the isolating of this particular point was in order for it to then shed light on the rest of the rule. Number two is the next rule of exegesis that we'll see later, Dovar Shoya Bechlal, and there, something that was part of a rule but was isolated because it had some type of unique feature. And it's because of that unique feature that it was isolated, and we'll see, when something like that happens, it cannot be categorized as part of the original principle from which it emanated until the Torah explicitly gives us instruction to return the unique element back to the original category. That's very abstract, but when we apply a concrete example, it will become much clearer. We continue now in the Gemara text in the bracketed section, Desanya. We have a brisa, which presents an example of this rule, Dovar Shohaya Bechlau, the Yotzim in Aklau, something, an item, a particular example that was part of a general rule. Ketzad, how do we illustrate this? The Pasuk says, V'anefesh asher tochal bosar mizevach ha-shlamim v'tumos ha-olav. The Torah speaks about someone eating shlamim, meat. Shlamim is a type of sacrifice, while the person is in a state of ritual impurity. And the Torah goes on to say that that is a serious offense that is punishable. V'halo shlamim b'chal kol ha-kodshim hoyu. Shlamim is one example of all sacrifices. And we know already that when it comes to sacrifices in general, one is not to consume them when they are in a state of ritual impurity. V'lama yatsu, why was shlamim isolated in a separate pasuk when we know a general principle that would have applied and explained the shlamim anyway? Answer, lahakish alehen, v'lomar loch. The shlamim were isolated for us to then compare other things to them and teach me, ma shlamim yuchodim kochim isbeach, just like shlamim are uniquely sanctified for the altar, af kol kochim isbeach, so to anything that's been sanctified to be brought as a sacrifice on the altar, the rules of tumas haguf apply. Yotsu kochei berek habayis, to the exclusion of items that were dedicated to the temple repair fund. A person can take a kosher variety animal and dedicate it to the temple repair fund, assuming that the animal, though it's kosher variety, it's not a type of animal that you would have brought as a sacrifice. So if one were to eat that in a state of ritual impurity, so he wouldn't be guilty of that sin. The sin of ritual impurity and eating while in that state applies only to kochei mizbeach. And that's what we accomplish, that's what the Torah accomplishes when it features the din of tumas haguf in the context of shlamim. Shlamim being, unique in the sense that it's kochei mizbeach, to thereby excluding things that are kochei berek habayis. So from this we then say any other temple dedication that happens to be dedicated to the altar will pattern the shlamim rule, excluding items dedicated to the temple repair fund. What did we just do then? We presented an illustration of something that was a detail that was part of a general rule, shlamim being part of the general rule of karbonos, and it's shedding light on the rule. The rule concerning tumas haguf. Hochonami, so too here, with regard to yibum and arayas, ha eshesach b'chlal ko arayas hoisa. The relation of husband of brother's wife, that relationship, one's brother's wife, we might call that sister-in-law, she is one example of many forbidden women. V'lomo yotzisa, why does the Torah feature Eishes Ach as a separate example? Lahakish Eileha, to compare all the other arayas to her. V'lomar loch, and to tell me, Ma Eishes Ach Sharyo, just like Eishes Ach, the wife of one's brother, is permitted when there are no children. Av kol arayas nami sharyon. So to all the other forbidden women are allowed when there are no children. And when we speak about Eishes Ach being isolated, Rashi says in the context of Yevomo Yovo Olaho that the surviving brother shall marry her. And what we're saying now is just like Eishes Ach, which is a forbidden relative when there are children. However, when there are no children, she's allowed. So to all other forbidden relatives, if a man had a daughter and the daughter married his brother, and in other words, an uncle married a niece, and the brother died, leaving no children, the niece is then confronting her father in Mitzvah Yibum. So a father would marry his daughter. And of course we know that you don't do that. The only reason you don't do that is because we have the word Oleha. So just to repeat the last point we made, the presence of the word Oleha, which tells us that you do not violate the rules of Arayas in order to accomplish Yibum, we need that word in light of what I would have said otherwise based on what we learned from the Korban Shlomim example. The Gemara rejects this. Me dummy. How can you compare how can you compare the case of sacrifices, that realm, to the case of Arayas and Yevomis? Hasam, in the case of the sacrifices, klal be'iser uprat be'iser, there is parallel in the pasuk and rule structure. The general principle is in the direction of prohibition, and the example was an example of prohibition. The klal being all sacrifices are prohibited when the person is in a state of tumah, when he is defiled. So Easter means he is prohibited from eating sacrifices. The prat was the example of shlomim, also in the direction of prohibition. You are not allowed to eat the shlomim when you're in a state of ritual defilement. Hacha, however, here in the case of Yevomis, klal v'iser, the klal, the general rule of Arayas, is in the direction of prohibition. A man is prohibited to cohabit with a woman who is an erva, one of the forbidden relations. Uprat, the example, namely Yevomo Yovo Elel, that Rashi cited before, the example of man marrying his sister-in-law when his brother died, leaving no children, is beheter. That pasuk is stated in the positive, in the permission direction of things. That's a novelty. That is a new idea. So that the structure or parallel doesn't exist. Just to repeat, in the case of the sacrifices, we had a principle, a cloud, a rule in the negative, and the example in the negative. In the case of Yibum and Arayas, we have the cloud in the negative, and the example of Yibum in the positive. Ha lo domi elo. We pointed out earlier, this is all part of a long rejection. And rather, the case of Eishes Ach, ha is the case of Eishes Ach, and Yibum lo domi elo, if you want to parallel it to anything, you can compare it to another rule that we find in biblical exegesis, l'davar shai b'chlal, a detail that was part of a rule, v'yotza lido l'davar ha'chadosh, and it was removed or isolated or focused upon by the Torah because of some new aspect, she'i ato yochol achziru l'chlalo ad she'achzirenu loch ha'kosa b'feirush. You cannot use the detail or the particular that has been isolated to shed light on the general rule whatsoever, unless the Torah gives us specific license to apply this unique feature to the rest of the rule. Making it a little more practical, the sister-in-law situation, as is the case of Eshes Ach, is unique in that she is permitted when there are no children. This idea of permitting her is a Dover HaChodosh. It's a new point, which we don't find with regard to other Arayas. So I wouldn't have even thought to apply that which we see by Eshes Ach to any of the other Arayas, leaving me with the feeling that, or the conclusion, that all the other Arayas are actually forbidden. If that be the case, what do I need the word Oleho to tell me that the rest of the Arayas aren't forbidden? It follows from this rule. Disanya. And now we have again a bracketed section, because the main point has just been stated. Namely, I don't see any need for the word Oleho. This bracketed section continues till the next house marking on Omid Beis, where we try again to find out to justify Oleho. Disanya. Davar shehoyu b'chlal. An example that was part of a rule, the Yotza Lidon v'davar ha'chodesh, and it was then isolated or focused upon because of some unique new aspect to the detail. I ato rashoi lachzir l'chlolo, you cannot then apply what you find by the detail to the general rule, ad shiachsi renu lo hakosu b'ferish, until the Torah says, apply, actually we're slightly inaccurate, the rule says, I cannot, once something is isolated to tell me about a unique aspect of it, and was taken out of its general category, I can't apply the rules of the old general category to this detail until the Torah says so specifically. And the illustration. Ketzad. The Pasuk speaks about an osham sacrifice that is brought by a mitzora. When the mitzora, he is a person that became defiled because a Kohen had ruled upon some unusual skin discoloration or whitening, leading him to become a mitzora. Upon the conclusion of that tzoras tumah, the patient brings sacrifices. Amongst the sacrifices, he brings a korban osham. And it says, regarding that korban osham, how it's treated, its blood applications are done in a somewhat unusual fashion. It says, v'shochar es hakeves b'mokim asher yishchar sechatos v'so'ilo b'mokim hakodesh ki kachatas osham hu lakohen. Now, the Torah, here you don't see this in the pasuk, but the Torah says that the osham mitzora blood is applied to the thumbs and earlobe of a mitzora. So it has, the mitzora korban osham has a unique form of blood application that you don't find by other sacrifices. You don't find it by other oshams either. By no other korban do you find a thumb and earlobe blood applications. The Torah, by the korban osham, says, the pasuk we just read, is that it shall be slaughtered where you slaughter a chatos or an ola. And it is to be treated like a chatos and an osham. She'ein talmud lomar kachatos ha'osham. There's no need to say that the korban of the mitzora is like a chatos. What is that phrase? What is the Torah adding as a chatos is the osham? Umatamad lomar kachatas osham. What does that phrase tell me? Answer. Lefishi yotza osham mitzora lidoin bedover hachodosh beboyin yad uboyin regel hayimonis. The osham mitzora was taken out of its general principle of normal blood applications to tell me about the bohen yad and bohen regel, that's the thumb of the hand and thumb of the foot, the right thumb blood applications. Yochol lo yehei tol matan domen ve'murim legabi mizbeach. Once it has these thumb blood applications, maybe it wouldn't require lo yehei tol, and tol means required, it wouldn't require matan domen blood applications and innard applications on the altar. Maybe the thumbs of the mitzora are, we'll say, altar replacements for the osham of a mitzora. We continue at the top of Amud Beis. Talmud Lomar, therefore the Torah had to go out of its way and tell me, ki kachatas ha'osham hu. The osham of the mitzora is like a sin offering. Ma chatas tu neman dom ve'mur megabi mizbeach, just like a standard sin offering has its blood and innards applied on the altar. Osham ton matan domim ve'murim legabi mizbeach. So too, the osham of the mitzvah has standard altar and innard blood applications as well. Ve'ilo ahadre krop, had the pasuk not said this, ki kachatas osham hu, had it not said that point of instruction, ahadre, now ahadre means returned. Had the Torah not returned the osham to the standard approach taken to other sacrifices, have, I mean, I would have thought, l'may de nofak nofak, l'may de lo nofak lo nofak, regarding that which it left, the general rules it left, and regarding that which it didn't, it didn't. Which, for our purposes, would mean that the with regard to blood application, so it's treated differently from the rest of sacrifices. With regard to, let's say, laws regarding the slaughtering of it, so there it's treated like the rest, like all other sacrifices. But I wouldn't have known, if not for this phrase, ki kachatas ha'osham hu, I wouldn't have known that the mitzora osham has altar blood emurim applications. Hachanami, so too with regard to the Yibum issue, Havamina Eshesacht Ishtaroi, the case of brother's wife, even though she is an Erva, the Torah permits her, Shar Arayas, lo, but all the other Arayas, no. So, why do I need Oleha to tell me that all other Arayas are not permitted? I wouldn't have thought so in the first place. Ela salka daita chamina. Without the word oleha that we find by Achos Isha, that tells me that all arayas are forbidden in the case of Eshesach, in the case of Yibum, that is, I would have thought, Tesi Achos Isha b'mamot sinu me'eshesach, I would have thought that the case of one's wife's sister falling to Yibum will be compared to. Ma motzinu means just like we find by eishesach. The Gemara spells this out. Ma eishesach miyabma. Just like a brother's wife is subject to yibum when she, husband, when his brother dies leaving no children. Af achos isha tisyabeng. So too, one's wife's sister is subject or eligible for yibum when his brother, who was married to his wife's sister, dies leaving no children. The Gemara says, would you really, and now, at that point then, we are to say, that's what I would have thought. I would have compared through the Ma Motzinu method of learning, comparison, of logical comparison, I would have come out saying that Achos Isha, which is symbolic of all other Arayas as well, would have been permitted. Therefore, I need Aleha. Well, once again, the Gemara rejects, and that's what the squiggle underline indicates in this particular sugya. Me, Domi, how can you compare Eishes Ach to the case of Achos Isha? Hasam Chad Isura. In the case of Eishes Ach, there's only one prohibition hovering over the woman. Now, what's that prohibition? Brother's wife. Hacha, in the case of Achos Isha, Trei Isuri. There are two prohibitions hovering over her, and they are, number one, this is your wife's sister. And number two, she happens to be married to your brother. So there are two Erva Isurim upon her. She is an Eishes Ach as well as an Achos Isha. So just because the Torah permits a woman that has one prohibition or one label of prohibition upon her, that doesn't mean I would say that a woman that has two labels of prohibition, she too should be allowed in the case of Yibum. The Gemara responds, yes, Mahu de Tema, I would have thought, had I not had Aleha, I would have thought Hoyel v'ishtari ishtari, that once the Torah gives license to the marriage of an erva in the context of Yibum, of a brother dying, leaving no children, I would have thought that the whole topic of Arayas becomes permitted. And that's why I need Aleha. So just to review this last point, why do I need Aleha? Because otherwise this idea of Hayu v'ishtari ishtari would have allowed any one of the Arayas. At this point, the Gemara is going to present precedent for this way of thinking. On the side, we have a starred note because we do, once again, have a bracketed section. B'toch ha-sograyim, we've noted on the side, within this bracketed section, Muvoim divrei reka lehoil de'ishtari ishtari. The background for even thinking along those lines, saying that since we see some level of permission, we grant that permission across the boards. Acharei ha-sograyim yavo ha-dechia v'chayzeres ha-shela lama li olah. After the brackets, the Gemara will present its rejection of this idea, of applying this idea to Yevamos. That's what you see at the bottom line, where the Gemara says, me dummy, how can you compare? Now, that having been said, let's see the basis of applying Hoyel v'ishtari ishtari to our case of Arayas. The Tatno say, we have a subtopic heading on the other side, other margin of the Gemara, Hamokur Loimar Hoyel v'ishtari ishtari, the source for even suggesting this type of reasoning. Nilmad will be learned mimutzorish chashmini shiloberer of Pesach for all carried bo bayom. We're going to learn this concept from the case of a mitzora, and we mentioned the mitzora in our previous sukya, or previous example, the individual who experienced tumah as a result of a kohen ruling upon his, let's say, his skin turning white at certain points on his body. The person remains tumah until the kohen rules that there's been a change in his body status, without getting into the details, of course. And then there is a 7-day waiting period, concluding it on the 8th day, sacrifices are brought, and at that point he achieves full-fledged purification. We're going to now focus in on that 8th day, falling out on the 14th of Nisan. The 8th day, coming out on the 14th of Nisan, has significance in that the 14th of Nisan is the day in which people would offer their Korban Pesach sacrifice. Now, Korban Pesach sacrifice, very serious matter. One who doesn't bring a Korban Pesach, he becomes Chayev Kores. He can be Chayev that very severe punishment of Kores. A Mitzora on his 8th day achieves purification through the bringing of sacrifices and a special blood application that we mentioned before, the thumb blood application, but we didn't explain before how that was done. That was done by the patient standing in the eastern gate leading into the temple courtyard. The gateway itself was had significant thickness to it, depth to it. So the patient would stand in the gateway, extending his hand, his right hand, and his right foot into the temple courtyard. Until he receives purification through the blood applications, he has the status of a what's called in Talmudic language Mechusar Kippurim. Without getting into the details of Mechusar Kippurim, other than to say that he is lacking the sacrifice. A person who needs to bring sacrifices in order to leave his state of Tumah is a quasi-state of Tumah and strictly forbidden to enter the temple courtyard. However, here, with regard to the Asha Mitzora, the Torah allows what we call partial entrance in order to achieve his purification. Special, we'll say, special contingency for a Mitzora. Our Gemara, as we noted in this introduction, or this Tatnose, the title that we gave to this section, the Mitzora, on his eighth day, also, in our case, experienced another form of Tumah called Keri. Keri is a male semen emission. It's a very short-term Tumah insofar as a person who experienced an emission is Tomei for one day. During that day, the day that he experienced the emission, he goes to the mikveh, he immerses himself, and by evening, he is then tohor. However, a person who is a tvul yom is likewise forbidden to be in the temple courtyard. Now, if we put all of these factors together, we've got a mitzora on his eighth day, who also experienced keri, and he needs to bring his korban pesach. And a person who is tomei cannot bring his korban pesach, and certainly in the evening, if he doesn't achieve purification, he certainly can't eat from it. Can we make a special allowance for the patient, the mitzora on his eighth day, who happened to experience keri? There are more details to this particular topic, as we will see in the Gemara. Don't lose sight of the forest for the trees. We're trying to illustrate this concept of Hoyl v'ishtari ishtari. Something that was originally forbidden, we allowed part of it, we're therefore going to allow everything. And that concept we try to apply to the realm of Arayis and Yibum. That once we allow Eishes Ach, which is a form, one example of Erva, will allow all additional labels of Erva that might be present. We open the floodgates, if you will, of Heter, of permission. Now the Gemara, in the brackets, Umenot Temro Damrin and Hoyel Vishtari Ishtari, from where do we know to apply or that such a concept exists, that once we give in a little, we go all the way? The Sanya, Mitzora Shechal Shmini Shelo Be'erev HaPesach, V'ro Keri Bo Bayom, a Mitzora, who reached his eighth day of, we'll say, his purification days. On the eighth day, he brings sacrifices. And we explained the Osham sacrifice before. And it comes out, in this particular example, on the 14th of Nisan, that's Erev Pesach. And on that very day, to his great disappointment, this man experiences a male emission, keri. From keri bo bayom. V'toval, and he immersed in the mikveh for the keri. The immersion is a key step in achieving tahara. He's not fully tar from the keri until sundown. Omru chachomim. The chachomim said, afapi she'ein tvul yoim achir nichnas, even though other tvul yom is a person who immersed himself in the mikveh and is waiting for sundown. So until that point, until sundown, he has a special halachic category called tvul yom, which is a form of tumah. So that even though in general other tvul yoms cannot enter the temple mount, ze nichnas, this gentleman, our mitzvah on the 8th day, 14th of Nisan, that Nisikeri, goes in onto the temple mount. And by going onto the temple mount, so he's doing something very unusual. Of course, unusual for a tvul yom. He'll eventually get to the eastern gate of the Azorah, and he'll put his hands into the temple courtyard for the blood application. Mutav, we said, let's read that line again. Afapi she'ein tvul yom achir nichnas, zeh nichnas. This guy will go. Mutav shiyavoy asei sheyesh bo kores, v'yidcha asei she'ein bo kores. Better for the positive command of bringing a Korban Pesach, which carries with it a kores punishment, if not done, and supersede the asei. The asei is, in this case, is people are sent out of the holy camp. That's called shiluach machanoi, sent out of the holy precinct. But we're going to overrule that command of being sent, of people who are tummy, to be sent out of holy precincts. We're going to overrule that ase she'en bo kores. Person who is a tvul yom, who is on the temple mount, is not guilty of kores. The Omar Rav Yochanan, Devar Torah filo ase les bay. Rav Yochanan points out that even a basic ase doesn't exist here. Ase meaning a positive command to be sent out. Shenemar, the Pasuk tells us, gives us a little background to this issue of a Tvul Yom on the Temple Mount. It says, Vayamod Yoshafat Bekal Yudol Lufnei Achotzra Chadosha. Yoshafat was a king in the time of the first Beis HaMikdash, and it says that he stood amongst the community, the assembled congregation, in front of the new courtyard. Maya Achotzra Chadosha. What's the new courtyard? So Gemara will point out, we're not talking about anything physically new, but rather a new law. Omar Rebbe, Shechichu Bodvorim V'omru. They advanced a new piece of legislation and declared, Tvul Yom Lo Yikones L'machne Levia. Someone who was a Tvul Yom, which we described before, after ritual, after immersion in the mikveh, he is not to enter the Machne Levia. Machne Levia, in our terms, means Temple Mount. So that's a later ruling. The restriction, or the general restriction of a Tvul Yom on the Temple Mount, is a later ruling. So from the Torah's standpoint, there's nothing wrong with a Tvul Yom being on the Har Habayis, on the Temple Mount. The Omar Ula Matam, the Ula, that is, he comes and explains, why are we making this allowance? There is a point that Rashi mentions that's very important for us at this point. V'yomar Ula, b'maseches Vochim. V'yomar Ula, we're reading from Rashi on the second line under the Gemara text. Ula said in Maseches Vochim, Bia b'miksa shma bia. Partial entrance is considered entrance. V'oisivne mehadikatoni zen nichnas umachnas yodel bahonos. We then challenge Ula, who says partial entrance into the temple courtyard is considered as if you fully entered. We challenge that when we come to the topic of a mitzora, where he is a mechusar kippurim, he is a form of tumah, and he puts his fingers and his thumbs into the temple courtyard when he still is partially tomei. The Amris Bia B'mitzvah Shema Bia, if you say partial entrance is considered full entrance, Ninami D'nichnas La Abayas Mishum Da'ase Shein Bo Koresu, the Bahonis Hechi Motsi Mayal Yodei. When it comes to as far as entering Temple Mount is concerned, okay, that's something that doesn't have a Kores penalty with it. So we can understand that it's Vul Yom or Mechusu Kippurim goes onto the Temple Mount. However, but as far as sticking your thumbs into the temple courtyard, how can that be done? Idi v'idi yasei sheyesh bo koresu. You have two conflicting commands that carry with it kores. You have the Korban Pesach on the one hand, and you have the need to be sent out of the temple courtyard. A person who's tomei in temple courtyard is guilty of kores. That's what the Gemara in Menachos says, that a person who is lacking the sacrificial offerings, he's pre-offerings, and he enters the temple courtyard, he's guilty of kores. The Ein Tzorach Lomar Tful Yom Shakol Tmeim, and all the more so people who are less purified, people who are simple Tful Yoms, and certainly someone who's completely defiled. Vishani Ula, and Ula answers the attack. Shiny Mitzora Hoyo Vahutra Lo Bio Bemitzas Lutzoroso Shariadai Mechusiki Puramu Ube Kores Vahutra Lo Minatoro Bio Benbe Zubemitzas Hutranami Likirio Amo Hoyo Vishtri Hadisura Ishtaroi Nami Idoch Dahave Gabe. We now turn back to the Gemara and we'll explain the Rashi through the words of the Gemara. The Omar Ula explains, Matam, why are we allowing the Mitzora Shara Keri Bashmini Shalo to do the thumb entrance, the partial entrance to the temple courtyard? Hail Vahutu Litzoraso Hutu Likurio. Since the Torah makes an exception for Tzoras, and that is a function of Psukim. Verses tell me that the Mitzora, who technically speaking is Mechusa Kippurim, he sticks his thumbs into the temple courtyard, but since we see the Torah allowing the Mitzora on his eighth day to do that which otherwise would be prohibited, we go all the way and say, well, even if he happens to be a Baal Keri also, we allow him to stick his thumbs in the Mitzora that happened to also have a Baal Keri label on him. We opened the floodgates. We said, since the Torah allows partial entrance for his Tzoras, we'll allow partial entrance for someone who was a Mitzora and also happened to be a Baal Keri. Now, with that concept illustrated of Hoyel Vishtri Ishtri, we apply that to our case of Yevamos. The Torah allows a man to marry the widow of his brother when there were no children, even though she, technically speaking, brother's wife, is otherwise a forbidden relationship. So if that same woman happens to have multiple labels of prohibition upon her, not just that she was your brother's wife, but she also happens to be, let us say, your mother-in-law, or your daughter, or your wife's sister, we will allow it. Oh, so that's why the Torah has to go out of its way to tell us, Aleha, don't do that. Don't say, Hoyel v'ishtri ishtri. And that all the other arayas are forbidden. The exception being, Eishes Ach, where the husband or where one's brother died, leaving no children. But if that brother's wife happens to have any additional erva labels, the word aleha tells me she is prohibited. Why do I need aleha? Just to repeat ourselves? Because I would have otherwise said hoyel v'ishtri ishtri. And where did we see hoyel v'ishtri ishtri? In the case of the Mitzora, b'shmini shelo shera keri. The Gemara rejects this. Mi domi. How can you compare mi domi lidu'ula? How can you compare the Yibum with Achos Isha to the Mitzora Shara Keri? Now, to appreciate this section of Gemara, it's important to get into a certain mode of thinking, and that involves order of events. Order of, we'll say, status assumption. That means when you assumed a certain status. The Gemara spells out the problem. Gemara says, how can you compare the issue of the Mitzora Shera Keri? What can we say about that individual? He first became a Mitzora. With the Mitzora label on him, he had a heter. He already had a heter, a potential heter, a potential allowance regarding Beis HaMikdash entrance. So you're dealing with someone that started off with that which is permitted. Then the Keri issue came up, and we're saying that the Keri issue doesn't present a problem for us. We were, let's say, superimposing the Keri case on a heter, on the case of the Mitzora. Now, switching to the case of Yibum, you have two brothers. And in the case of Achos Isha, you have two brothers, and they're married respectively to two sisters. How did the course of events unfold over there? Is there a parallel? Well, let's think outside for a moment. You have the two brothers, we'll call them Reuven and Shimon. Shimon is going to survive his brother who dies without children. If Reuven married first, upon that marriage, there was a potential heter. As soon as his brother married his wife, as soon as Reuven married, Shimon the bachelor had a potential heter for his brother's wife, of course, in the sad event of his brother dying and leaving no children. But there was a potential heter at that point. That's like the person who first became Mitzora. There was a potential heter for his entrance, his partial entrance to the Beis HaMikdash. So if we want to keep the parallel going, we would then say, afterwards, Shimon, after his brother Reuven was happily married, Shimon marries her sister. So Reuven was married to Rachel, and Shimon marries Leah. If we follow that sequence of events, we can say there's a parallel, and that upon the death of Reuven's wife, Rachel, Shimon, if we would keep the parallel to Mitzora running, Shimon would be allowed, though he is married to Leah, he could marry his wife's sister, who was married to his brother, Reuven. Once again, we started off with Reuven getting married. Reuven is the fellow who's going to die. We started off with his getting married first, Shimon viewing her with this potential heter in mind. Though Shimon went ahead and married her sister later on, when Reuven dies, Shimon will be allowed to do the Yibum, and that's why I would need the case of Oleha, the word Oleha. However, if, let us say, we switch things around, Shimon marries Leah first, Rachel who eventually will marry Reuven, Rachel, is already prohibited. And what's the label? Achos Isha, sister of one's wife. That erva doesn't have any potential heter built into it. Achos Isha is a prohibited marriage. One cannot marry his sister's wife. The fact that Reuven later on marries Rachel, Shimon's sister's wife, that's not going to make things any more allowed for Shimon in the event that Reuven dies leaving no children. You started off in that particular case, you started off with Esor. That doesn't parallel the case of the Metzora who then saw Keri on his eighth day. If it doesn't parallel, so then there's no Svora of Hoyel v'Ishtri to apply to the case of Yibum, even though it had validity or relevance to the case of the Metzora b'Shmini Shalal. Of course, Metzora b'Shmini Shalal Keri. Having spoken that out, we now go back into the Gemara itself, the top of Daf Ches Amud Aleph. Tenach means things are noach, things are pleasant, things make sense. Tenach, the parallel between Metzora B'Shmini Shloshua Keri, which was Ula's case, and our case of Arayas and Yibum. Hecha de nosa meis v'achakach nosa chai. The word nosa meis, you certainly cannot translate that literally here, it wouldn't make any sense, but it means the brother that eventually will die, leaving no children, he is the one that got married first. And we illustrated that before, namely, Reuven marries his wife Rachel first, Shimon is as yet unmarried. V'achar kach noso chai, and then Shimon marries Leah, Rachel's sister. And then Reuven dies, leaving no children. We can say, demigu deishteri isur eishes ach, since we allowed that initial prohibition of Eishes Ach, because Reuven married first. His wife was labeled Eishes Ach, which the Torah allowed for potentially anyway. So Ishtri Nami, Isur Achos Isha, the second prohibition can also be overlooked or overruled, namely Achos Isha. And that parallels Ula's case of someone first becoming a Metzora and then seeing Keri. Elo nosa chai v'achakach nosa meis. However, where the surviving brother marries first, where Shimon marries Leah, at that point, Rachel is prohibited, even though Rachel's a single woman, she's prohibited to Shimon, because Rachel is the sister of Shimon's wife. That's called Achos Isha. So where that label set in first, the label of Achos Isha, which doesn't have any potential heter, the Achakach Nosa Meis, and then Reuven marries Rachel. Isur Achos Isha Kodim. The prohibition of Achos Isha set in first. And that is not provided for by the Torah with any heter, with any permission. V'afilu nosa meis nami. And even in the case where Reuven marries first, Tenach hecha de nosa meis umeis. The parallel to Ula would exist only if first Reuven died, first Reuven married and then died, V'acharkach nosochai. And then Shimon marries Leah. If you follow this order of events, where first Reuven married Rachel and died, at that point, Rachel was allowed to Shimon. And then, before Shimon married Rachel, he married Leah. He married the Yavoma's sister. Then we would have a tight parallel to Ula's case, where the Mitzorah reached his eighth day. At that point, you got the heter of Bohonos into the Azora. And then, later on, the problem arose of his having Keri. There was an interim point of permission, of total permission. Let's read that line again. Even in the case of, we said, where Reuven marries first, Teinach hecho de noso meisu meis ve'achakach noso chai, where Reuven married Rachel first and died before Shimon married anybody. At that point, there was a heter. V'achakach noso chai, and then Shimon married Leah, Rachel's sister. The chazil of the baini. There was an interim point in time where Rachel was allowed. Ela nosa meis velo meis v'achakach nosa chai. However, where Reuven, who is the brother that eventually will die, where he married Rachel, but did not die until he didn't die until Shimon first married Leah. Well, as long as Reuven is alive, Rachel is not allowed to Shimon. There's no interim heter in that case. Let's read that line again. Ela nosa meis velo meis. V'acharkach nosa chai. If Reuven married first, didn't die yet, Shimon marries Reuven's wife's sister, and then Reuven dies. Lo echsi lei klau. There was no point in time where Reuven's wife was allowed to Shimon. Mi loy moidi Ula. Wouldn't Ula concede? Shimro keri balel shmini shein machnis yodav lebahinois. Shelo yotza b'shah shiruya lahavi bo karbon. If you were to then transpose that case to the Mitzorah case, imagine a Mitzorah who didn't reach the eighth day yet. He reached the nighttime leading into the eighth day. You don't bring Korbanos at night. And at that night, the Leil Shmini, he saw Keri. There was no interim permission period of putting thumbs into temple courtyard. That's because sacrifices cannot be brought at night. And that's what this phrase means, Shelo yotza b'shah shiruya lahavi bo karban. He never achieved a point at which he could have brought his Asham sacrifice before the Keri sighting. So even Ula would agree that we wouldn't apply Hoyl v'ishtari under those circumstances. So if I'm not going to apply Hoyl v'ishtari ishtari, even in the case of Mitzorah, how in the world would you have thought to apply that in the case of Arias? Very simply stated, I would never have thought to say that since we allow a basic Eishes Ach to do Yibum, I therefore will apply that allowance to all other superimposed forbidden relations. If that be the case, I don't need Oleha. Oleha isn't going to teach me something that I wouldn't have known on my own. Therefore, you see a new house marking. Elo ki itzrich Oleha. Where do I need the Torah to say Oleha? Hecha denoso mesu mes, v'achakach noso chai. That very case, which we said would have been a tight parallel, it's only one case, it's a we'll say minor situation or a rare situation, but only in that case do I need the Torah to go out of its way to say you can't marry her. Namely, where Reuven marries Rachel and dies, leaving no children. At that point in time, Rachel is allowed to Shimon. Shimon doesn't marry her, but rather marries her sister. The Torah comes and says to Shimon, through the word Aleha, you cannot take as a Yevamah, or as a wife, your wife's sister. And we will not say, in the case of Yibum, Hail the Ishtri, Ishtri, even though there was precedent in the case of the Mitzor Shiro Keri B'Shmini Shilo, where we did say Hail the Ishtri, Ishtri. So I found purpose, I found a case where I need Aleha. That very, let's say, restricted or unique case of Noso Meis, Umeis V'achakach Noso Chai. The Gemara goes on with another need, another answer of why or under what circumstances I need Aleha. V'iboy Esemo, another approach to why I need Aleha. Asya Behekesha. If not for the word Aleha, I would have learned through Hekish. Hekish is another form of biblical exegesis that we would have allowed Erva in Yibum. What is that? Mida Rebbe Yona. This is a point, notice it's a long point. Diyom Rebbe Yona, Vitema, Rav Huna, Brei, De Rebbe Yeshua, other versions by way of names suggest Rav Huna. Omar Kro, the Pasuk says, Ki kol asher yaseh mikol hatoyevesa eila v'nichrasu. This Pasuk comes at the end of the section of the Torah dealing with forbidden relatives. Hukshu kol harayas kulon, Li'eshes ach. The Torah compares all the arayas, it compares one to the other, they're compared to Eshes ach. Ma Eshes ach, Sharia, just like Eshes ach, wife of brother is allowed in the context of Yibum. Af kol arayas nami sharyon. So too, all other arayas would have been allowed. Therefore, kosav rachmono oleha. Therefore, without Aleha, I would have relied on this Hekish and allowed all the other Arayas. We're in the context of a Daf Yomi schedule. We've already spilled over onto our new Daf, Daf Ches. So even though we're dead in the middle of a discussion, without any choice, we have to stop over here. But before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com in order to access marked Gemaras if you are interested. Once again, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.